Join us for the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society's annual conference. It's happening October 24th through the 26th in New York City. This year's theme, Rethinking Paradigms, Innovative Approaches for Optimal Wellness. And it's not just for healthcare professionals. Teachers, parents, and curious minds are invited too. We've got a phenomenal lineup of keynote speakers. Dr. Thomas Campbell, physician and co-author of The China Study, bringing insights on nutrition and lifestyle medicine. And Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, trauma expert and author of The Body Keeps the Score, who practically rewrote how we think about trauma. I'll be chatting with some of this year's speakers in upcoming episodes of Healthy Brain, Happy Body, so stay tuned to get a sneak peek and maybe even a little inspired. Find the registration link in the show notes. It's 3 days of inspiration, insight, and community you won't want to miss. Here's what Jeffrey Schultz, board member of NRBS, has to say about coming to New York City.
One of my favorite things is meeting people, talking to them, talking to other clinicians, finding out that they're struggling with things too, and then just having fun. Because the cool thing is we're not just all brainiacs. There's actually some pretty sweet people to hang out with and have a good time with. So I found friendships out of this. I found a lot of fun with this. And I'm just going to add that on top of it. Because if you're thinking about just, hey, I can get continuing education units, great. You can do that online. What you are not going to get is the experience of meeting people and making the friends. And I'm kind of old school when it comes to that. I miss the conferences. I love the seminars. Why? Because frankly, I just want to get to know more people and I want to learn from them and have a good time. So I got to tell you, one of the things you're going to get out of this, and you need to go. You don't want to just go online. You want to go to New York City because you'll have a chance to actually eyeball to eyeball, face to face. We're going to have a chance to get to meet each other and shoot the breeze, learn. It's a really good environment for that.
So join us in New York City, October 24th through the 26th. Find the registration link in the show notes or at nrbs.org. We'll see you there.
Welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body, a podcast from the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. I'm Dr. Saul Rosenthal, a health psychologist in the Boston area, and your host as we investigate the incredible connections between brain and body. Our guide today is Jeffrey Schutz, the founder and executive director of the Neurovation Center in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. He's a speaker, teacher, and master at translating neurofeedback jargon into understandable and meaningful language. On August 12th, he gave a webinar to the NRBS about clear and useful communication with clients, other professionals, and the general public. We discussed the challenge of talking about such a technical field so that other people can understand us. Listeners, we're here with Jeff Schutz, who just gave a free webinar to the NRBS, and the topic was what he calls Quiggish. So first, Jeff, welcome to Healthy Brain, Happy Body.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure. I have a lot of fun doing this, and if it gives me a chance to meet folks, I love it.
That is our hope, and to get more people to understand things like Quiggish. So why don't we start there? What is Quiggish?
Pretty straightforward. Quiggish is simply neurofeedback clinicians making the neurobabble that we work with all day long accessible to our people. It's translating neurofeedback into meaningful human connection. And it's unafraid and unapologetic in its use of metaphor, analogies, stories. The reality is that that's what so many people connect with. I mean, we're a storytelling culture. You know, we all love our movies. We all love watching our, you know, binge watching our TV shows and our Netflix series. We love story. And so my contention is that if you really want to connect with clients, if you want to see them elevate their experience with you, to have greater, you know, satisfaction and outcomes, connect with them on that level.
So that's what you mean when you talk about translating neurofeedback to a human connection. You're talking about doing that via metaphor, story, narrative.
Absolutely. Right. And what I don't want to do is I don't want to, by using a playful term like Quiggish, right? We have a lot of fun in my office with that term. You know, we talk about
you know, queegishness and being quee gurus. And, you know, we have some other funny stuff that we throw in there just with the terminology. But by being quaint or cute with that terminology, I do not want to take away from the significance of being good at what we do, right? That's one of the caveats that I give is, I don't want to take away from the clinical significance of what we're dealing with. However, when you're able to take something like, you know, rhythmic theta in the anterior cingulate, and you're able to communicate it as in, it's kind of like trying to close a door that's got a wedge under it. The harder you push, it ain't closing. You know, and by the time you make these kinds of connections for folks, it clicks on in the back of their head. Like, wait, that makes sense. So I kind of balance it. When I talk through things, I'll uphold a high level of clinical expertise. You know, I don't want people to think I'm just a jokester, but I do want to communicate with them.
So translating all that sort of very technical clinical information into, you're not dumbing it down.
No.
You are translating it. I guess that is really the best word to use.
Exactly.
So that we share the meaning.
Yeah. And that was one of those things that we were talking about before. You know, I don't want to steal thunder or anything like that. The reality is people are in fact coming in to ask us about a product they know very little about under most circumstances. And that's the big challenge that we face. How do we help people that are, well, rightfully so, asking questions, confused, skeptical? My son has a saying. He says, a confused mind seldom says yes. And so really the challenge we have is helping them to be non-confused. Let's clear it up. That way they can make really good decisions. And that's totally in keeping with informed consent anyway. We want our folks to know exactly what it is that they're getting involved with. And once they understand it, I mean, like I always tell folks, the more people understand about neurofeedback, the better. It's just such a beautiful technique, a beautiful modality, a beautiful addition to the world of treatment that once they find out about it, they're in.
One of the ways we often talk about neurofeedback is using the language of learning and and behavior, particularly operant conditioning, operant learning. And there was a lot of sort of side discussion going on during your talk, a lot of chatting about, well, what narratives do we all use? And one of the attendees, Fernando Cavallo, he talked a lot about how the QEEG, that is, you know, the evaluation we do, the EEG evaluation we do, it serves a similar purpose as a functional behavioral analysis. So it's a way of a deep observation, deep description of behavior that is then used to develop sort of a behavioral intervention, a behavioral treatment. What do you think of that analogy, for example?
Oh, I think it's great. I think anything that we can do to begin to bridge the gap, you know, when we're talking about analysis, one of the things that I found is people love them, absolutely love them. I mean, and it's in the same vein as, you know, wanting to get a Myers-Briggs analysis. They're just dying to see what the outcomes are. There's always a little bit of nervousness when you're talking about brain science. I mean, I've regularly had people come in and they've been like, did you find anything? You know, like really nervous. And I'll, you know, immediately want to put them, you know, I want to put them at rest. You know, one of the first things I can say is, look, here's some good stuff. The first thing you need to know is, because I've done the neuroanalysis, you're one of the few people on the planet that we can confirm has a brain first, and number two, it works. So you're good. And then I kind of throw in there, I can also confirm it's human. This is good. And it starts to set people at ease. They start to kind of go, okay. And I'm like, and here's another thing. And again, this isn't always the case because sometimes we are able to identify pathological features, epileptiform discharges, paroxysmal kinds of stuff. Okay, if that's there, I won't say this, and I'll have to address that in a different way. However, you know, most of the time I can look at it and go, and the good news is there's nothing that's pathology. And it kind of brings it back a little bit, helps people to kind of settle in and go, what do you mean by that? Well, everything that I see in there is stuff that I see on a regular basis. It's all pretty cool. It's good stuff. We can move on with it. You know, and then kind of jump in. And, you know, it is really fascinating, though, because it's a functional assessment of what's going on in their brain. They love it. I mean, like half the time I get through a neuroanalysis and people are asking me if I can like read their palms. I'm like, no, that's not that way. I don't do that. Yeah. Anyway, so hopefully I answered your question.
No, absolutely. And the QEEG, it is a story
yes.
about this person. And what I often tell people in the beginning is, I don't want any of this to surprise you.
Yes.
It's your brain. You should know it better than anyone else. But at the end of this, you should realize I've told you the story of your brain.
Yeah.
And how it works. I think a lot of people come in and we're guilty of sort of reinforcing this, I think, is really focused on the numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, what's my theta level and has that changed? And what does my QEG look like 10 sessions in? And it's hard, that misses the point. And the, right. the point is really, well, what's your life like?
Yes.
Which is, again, going back to your idea of what the story is. I'm curious about this, about what metaphors, what stories, what narratives people use. So other people were talking about likening neurofeedback to physical therapy for the brain or going to the gym for the brain. What are some of the metaphors you use with your clients?
Yeah, those are great ones, because I regularly will tell folks, you know, when they say how many sessions is going to take, I will regularly go back to that fitness illustration. Hey, look, if you wanted to get in shape, let's say you wanted to run a half marathon, you're going to have to work 2 or 3 times a week to do it. You're going to have to do it, you know, get disciplined, all that kind of stuff. So that is one of the metaphors that I love to use. So whoever dropped that one, kudos to you, 2 thumbs up. I'll have to figure out like some kind of like a Kweegish thumbs up. Like, you know, when people come up with really good stuff, like that's just great. You know, it makes our field better. One of them, I think I may have shared this on there, was like a lot of times I'll use martial arts. No, I'm not a martial artist. I was a wrestler, a little different. But, you know, when you do the martial arts, right, they have things like forms. And so the forms are going through and you're learning different moves and blocks and changing your balance. And right. And I'll ask people if they've ever done that before, and they go, oh, yeah. I'm like, so what happens after the first time you go through a form? Have you mastered it? Of course not. And I'll be like, well, how about after the first like 8 or 10 or 15 times? You starting to get a feel for it? Yeah. But have you mastered it? No. You know, so you maybe start integrating some of those moves, right? So, and they'll be like, yeah. And I'll be like, it takes a lot of practice to master it, doesn't it? And I'm like, that's neurofeedback. You come into the office and you're practicing a form. Your brain has to master. This is why typically it takes a little bit of time, because your brain is learning it. You're going to start to see changes because it's going to integrate some of these things into everyday life. But that's one of the big ones that I use. A lot of folks end up relating to that. As I think of them, I'll mention them. It's really kind of funny. I think at this point, I'll kind of throw them in there based upon the person. I feel like I've done it enough times that, you know, you almost get a feel for that individual. You realize some people you can be more playful with. And like I said, sometimes you just have to take their personality into account. You should always take that into account. Take their context into account. Take their pain into account. I absolutely would not, you know, be playing so whimsically if I had somebody who was a recent rape survivor. I'd be taking that a whole lot more gently. So I always, you know, kind of caveat this by saying we can have lots of playful things that are really good for a lot of clients. And then we also have to tone it down and make it appropriate, you know, not just humorous, but, you know, make it appropriate for who we're talking with.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to the general issue, which is the stories we tell, the narratives. We as clinicians, we also need to not get so caught up in the numbers. We need to have that flexibility, that back and forth with our clients and what works for them and what doesn't, where we might be more playful, where we might be more serious, that we could be both at the same time. You talked about neurofeedback. I found this really interesting. You talked about neurofeedback in terms of a paradigm shift rather than a set of tools. And I actually think that's a really important point. I'd really love to hear more what you have to say about that. Because many people who come in, they say, oh, I want to learn tools to either they want to be fixed or they want to learn tools so that they can go out back out in the world and not change anything. What is the difference between a paradigm shift and developing a set of tools?
Sweet. I'm glad you asked that question. you know, ridiculous self-promotion moment. I do have a book that I'm looking to get published within the next couple of months on launching your career in neurofeedback, bringing it really down in a very simple way. One of my chapters is on the paradigm shift. I've met way too many individuals that have come to me for mentoring, supervision, even folks that I've just met at conferences, and they're like, their eyes are like wide open. Like, what did I do? they're going, I just invested $25,000 in equipment, software, and all this kind of stuff. All of a sudden realizing that after I got certified, it's blowing my mind. I this is way more than I thought it was going to be. And so what I want to do is I want to help people to realize that, number one, when you get into it, it's not the same thing as, you know, again, getting a certification in treating people that are the victims of narcissistic abuse. Those are great. However, you're likely to take that and incorporate it into your therapeutic model very easily. When it comes to neurofeedback, it's not just the expense that's incurred and the amount of expertise. I would argue, number one, that there's a core set of convictions that are radically different about most people that are neurofeedback clinicians. We think differently. We're willing to look at the brain and really we're willing to assess it. We're willing to get our brains into the technology. We're willing to get our hands goopy by putting caps on. And we're willing to think not just in terms of diagnostic categorizations. We're looking at symptom etiology. Wholly different approach. Right. And so when I do treatment with folks, my entire process is oriented not around coming up with a code that I can bill for. I mean, I still do it. I have to. I'm not actually crazy about that idea. I feel like it's misleading in a lot of ways. Got to change. And I feel like those of us that are in the mental health world that are doing neurofeedback see ourselves in some sense as pioneers, as reformers. Why? Because we're thinking about mental health completely differently. We're seeing the etiology in actual brain dysregulation features. And we're able to bring in an entirely different tool set. I mean, like, you know, I got to come up with a better, like, you know, my own Kuigish to interpret the way that I'm thinking about this, because therapy, absolutely vital, crucial, you know, prescription medications, vital, central, they're never going to go away. But there's a middle ground where neurofeedback fits that is not like either one of them, connects the two of them together and results in a radical rethinking about how we're going to, you know, model the understanding of what's wrong, how we're going to treat it, and the outcomes that we can expect. Not to mention the fact, I said, you know, like a lot of what I like to do too is I've worked a lot to kind of like design actual flow in a facility. You will not design a neurofeedback center similarly, shouldn't. I would argue you don't want to create your office to just be like neurofeedback's an add-on, you know, that there's a lot of ways that we can be creative to actually change the actual look and feel of our facility that is a part of that paradigm shift. So a lot of different levels, a lot of different thinking, whole new platform. And I just want people to be aware of it. I love it. Like I would tell you, like, I love being a therapist. But if I had to see clients 32 hours a week, I'd probably go crazy doing it that way. I love what I do because I can balance it. I've got a foot in both worlds. So a very different way of thinking, I would say. I mean, do you find it that way, Saul? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah. No, it absolutely is. And it's I think of us as storytellers. I mean, that's always been my approach. And I do think that the QEEG, the neural feedback, biofeedback, it gives us another dimension to tell the story.
I was just looking off to the side because there's a book that I really recommend, and this is for those of you who are interested more in the marketing strategy side of this. It's not specifically for neurofeedback, but the name of it, I forget the name of the guy that wrote it. This is terrible. I was hoping to find it, is Story Branding. And this guy has a phenomenal approach that says, look, because everybody likes story, you need to position yourself not as the hero of the story when you're giving them your product. We're not the hero. They're the hero of the story. We're simply the wizened person that's going to help the hero of the story achieve their mission, right? I tell everybody all the time, I'm an out-of-the-closet nerd. I was into the Lord of the Rings back when if you knew what a hobbit was and the names of all of the dwarves in the Hobbit, you'd be thrown into a locker. And I think I was. But anyway, it's now cool and it's now popular. But really, to extend that analogy, when we're talking neurofeedback, we want to make sure that that person that comes in, we recognize that they're Frodo. They've got the ring of power. The ring of power that they have is all of the symptoms that they're struggling with. They have to destroy it. And if they don't destroy it, then the forces of evil are going to take over. They're not going to live their life the way they want to. Who are we? We're Gandalf. We're Aragorn. Hopefully those of you guys that are out there are nerds too. You have enough connection with the culture. And if you don't have that connection, you got to go watch those movies this weekend. It'll only take you about 37 hours. Anyway, I just kind of say is when you come alongside them and you listen to their story, you say, oh my gosh, that's really amazing. What's the greatest climax to this story for you? What does the ending want to look like? And then you say, wow, this is so cool. I actually have tools that can help you. And it transformed the way that I thought about marketing myself, because I used to think I was the hero. I don't know how to say it any other way. Kind of had to repent of my sins and go, no, I'm not the hero. They are. And when they feel like it, they tend to be a lot more amenable to my help.
You're talking about not just changing the paradigm for us, but for our clients.
Yes.
And shifting them to the hero role, if you will. And I'll put a link to that book in the show notes. And that's very different than the typical client / patient role in our healthcare system. And you talked about how we can sort of occupy a space in the middle of, say, biomedical on one end and more, I guess, holistic on the other. So what is the relationship we have with biomedical, with the sort of traditional or typical healthcare system?
Boy, I got to tell you, that's a huge question. We kind of addressed it a little bit. That's that concept of positioning. Where do you place yourself in the industry against others that might be considered competitors? And again, I kind of look at it from the perspective, my old thing, and synergy is that, you know, collaboration is a new competition. You're better off collaborating with people that are around you. That's a whole different story. But how do we fit ourselves into that middle ground? I feel like that's one of those things that we all feel the stress and strain of. How do I differentiate myself to the clients? And we focus so much on the fact that nobody's ever heard us before. And it's one of those things that I hear coming back from neurofeedback providers all the time. I can't get over this obstacle. It's too big. How do I get? And what I came to realize was this obstacle is actually the one place where we can wedge ourselves in. Why do I say that? Because most of the clients that come to me have done all kinds of therapy. They've done it for years. And they love their therapist. They've made some progress. It's never really resolved the issue. They've never gotten over whatever it is they went in for. Still diagnosable. And then you get all of those folks that are coming in saying, I feel like at this point in time, my doctor's just guessing. I'm on all these meds. They haven't worked. Or you have people that say, I don't like it. I don't want to be on it. I don't like the side effects, right? So what you're beginning to see is you're seeing limitations on those two different modalities, right? We only have two modalities that are considered appropriate first level, high level, first tier intervention strategies in the mental health world. Those are the ones that we just automatically go to. And my contention is that symptoms originate from different places than just plain, I would say, on the one side, care of the soul, which therapy is good at, and neurotransmitter neurochemistry, which meds are really good at, but there's this whole neuromodulation thing that's completely different, completely centered, right? And now the good news is we can look at it and say, folks, we now understand that there's another source of your problem symptoms, not getting rid of the other ones. They're still there. We still need therapy. We still need the meds. However, we've been asking them to do way too much, right? Our problem is paucity of categories. We don't have enough solutions for the problems that are out there, and you're coming right up against this. My clients are all seeing that. They come because they're like intuitively, they know that there's something missing. And that's where I market. I market directly into that felt need. You know that there's another solution. We have it.
Well, many of our listeners are providers, are biofeedback and neurofeedback providers. If you had to give them one piece of advice, what would it be to help them grow their practice, actually, or grow the field?
I would straight up say, right, go back to some of that. Your client is what matters, right? I always go back and I say, the reason I do what I do is because I actually love my clients. What does that mean? Well, love's not a feeling. It's an act of my will. It's a desire on my part to do everything I can within my power that's appropriate, obviously boundaried, to improve on their lives, to make their lives better. And so the driving consideration in everything I do is to put their needs first. That may sound, for some people, they may look at that and say, that's a little, you know, a little naive, right? We have to be worried about profit. Of course we do. I got to provide for my family too. And I'm not loving my family if I ain't making profit. So we definitely want to keep an eye to that. But I would really say honestly, like, where did Quigish come from? It came out of a passion for my clients, for wanting them to understand, wanting them to participate in this, wanting them to have a really good experience. So I feel like if that's kind of what drives you, and honestly, I think it does drive the vast majority of people in our field. We go into mental health care, and I think that sometimes all the technology, all the concerns about revenue generation, all of the stuff figuring about how do I get rid of this artifact in the everyday life and the common cares and concerns that we all have, it sometimes blinds us to what brought us in. I won't forget that. I can't. At the end of the day, that's what matters to me, is making sure that we drive this field forward in a way that demonstrates care, concern, and ultimately, like, genuine love. Like the real stuff for who our people are.
I think that we need to have that as our basis, or why are we doing this?
Bingo. It's what it's all about. The end of the day, the only thing I love those stories. I love the stories of the clients that come back to me. You know, I tell folks, I have a folder with every single note that I've ever been given from a client. And I'll get them, they'll write me cards, they'll send stuff. Thank you. Those are the things that I got to tell you. That's the kind of legacy that I want.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on Healthy Brain, Happy Body. And I'll put a link to that webinar recording for people who want to see it. And always great to talk with you.
Love it. Thank you, Saul. I appreciate what you do. Just amazing stuff and helping us out and pushing the field forward. So thank you.
We're on that same mission. You are listening to Healthy Brain, Happy Body. I'm your host, Dr. Saul Rosenthal. Our guide today was Jeff Schutz. You can see his free webinar by following the link in the show notes or at nrbs.org. Subscribe to this podcast by clicking the subscribe here link or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy Healthy Brain, Happy Body, please rate us and leave reviews at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Reviews help us get more listeners, and that's more people who can learn about and benefit from biofeedback, neurofeedback, and other mind-body approaches to health. Also, let us know what you think by sending us email. Our address is healthybrain@nrbs.org. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is produced and edited by me. The theme music is Catch It by Coma Media. It is a production of the Northeast Region Biofeedback Society. Go to nrbs.org to find out more about the organization, including our trainings, monthly webinars, and yearly conference. This year, we'll be gathering at New York City from October 24th to the 26th. So hopefully you'll join us there. All opinions expressed are those of our guests and not the NRBS. This podcast is not meant to replace advice from qualified healthcare providers. Healthy Brain, Happy Body is supported by the sponsors of NRBS, including the Neurovation Center, who sponsored Jeff's webinar, and by the International Society for Neuroregulation and Research. Be sure to join us on our next episode as we continue to explore the keys to our well-being on Healthy Brain, Happy Body.